It finally dawns on me, the culmination of that speculation as to how you can have two loops, the aluminum loop and the iron loop, and have a circuit. You know, is it alternating? Is it pulsed? Is it this? Is it that? Well, I had to remember something I forgot. Whenever you succeed at getting amps and volts to separate by half a cycle, flow is no longer an issue because it all arises everywhere at the same time, even though it's different places within the circuit. It's a phenomenon that in which there's no longer any more that pattern of illusion that current is flowing, which is all current is anyway, a pattern that moves down the wire. There's no longer that illusion because nothing, no pattern moves anywhere. It simply arises everywhere at the same time. And thus, it becomes ever more evident that simultaneity is a requirement, not just a result, but a requirement as well as a result. And so parallel capacitance has to, or something has to dictate simultaneity, or else you'll never get amps and volts separated by half a cycle. That's the fundamental flaw I was overlooking. Well, it's not a flaw in as much as I forgot or overlooked it, because we're so used to seeing ripples and that presumed movement of some sort, and then of course we have to get trained. Oh, there's no such thing as current, because Ohm's law does not exist. Watts is a fiction because we forget about the element of time. And once we include time, now we've included one of the three parameters of electrical reactance, so we have to include the other two, or else, again, we're incomplete. So once we start throwing in all these things, and then we realize, well, current is just a shorthand notation for voltage divided by resistance, which is really does not produce voltage squared divided by resistance equals watts, because then there'd be no distinction between the two voltages, and it doesn't make any sense to square them. But it does point out that current, you can get away without current. All you need is voltage and resistance. That's a start. But then once we realize there's two different types of voltages, and then it's far more complicated than simple resistance alone, and then it's also within a framework of time, now we got something more accurately realistic, but never taught to electrical engineers, lest they stumble across over unity circuits by accident, God forbid. So it's voltage applied, which is times the resulting voltage, which are two different voltages. Just like Eric Dollar says, there are two different, energies that enter or exit a capacitor. Well, yeah, duh, because one is the response that the capacitor generates and has nothing to do with conversion of the voltage that's applied across the two terminals, unless the displacement is no more than 90 degrees or less. Then we could say, okay, fine, it looks like a displacement, but when it's 180 degrees, no, it has nothing to do within a direct equivalence to what entered as to what exits. It's simply the energy that is applied, the voltage that's applied, I should say, is what opens the door to the ether so that the imaginary power can come through the portal of reactive impedance and enter our real world, or exit our real world and go back to where it came from and make power diminish from our world. In any case, it's voltage applied, which is real, voltage resultant, which is imaginary, divided by resistance and the two types of impedances, capacitive and inductive, and all per unit time. So now it's no longer watts, it's joules. And watts does not exist because current does not exist. Only voltage and impedance exists. And that's it. And, of course, time. And that's it. There's no such thing as current. What we call current is a dynamic property of voltage that changes over time, giving the illusion of current because it's a ripple pattern more often than not that we see, a transverse wave that we see that has nothing to do with energy moving down the wire. That's why photons have no mass, because they're just information. It's a code word for information. Quantum mysticism has abrogated unto itself certain concepts from electrical engineering and given them mystical terms that nobody really understands nor appreciates where they came from. They've been stolen from electrical engineering in order to regulate electrical engineering and suppress free energy. So Big Bang is the essential nature of electrical reactance. It wants to explode in your face. And photons are massless because they are information. They are not energy. They are not matter. They have nothing to do with energy or matter. And energy is just dynamic matter anyway. That's all energy is. Now, voltage can be stored in space. That's true, because space is a dielectric. But that's not energy. That's just a potential. That's why it's called a potential. There's some more code words, but those are a couple. And there are plenty of fictions, such as current is simply a mathematical shorthand notation for something that's far more complicated, namely resulting voltage divided by various impedances and simple resistance. That's complicated. They don't want the technician to worry about that. They just want to call it current and be done with it. You know, teach the technician simple stuff so they can do their job and shut up and don't talk like me, who had to learn it on his own by trial and error from a simulator to teach him these concepts. You know, it very slowly, very gradually, plus, of course, electrical engineering ideas and mathematical equations, but still, and software, the software code of Paul Falstead's simulator showing me that electrical reactance is at the heart of the behavior of coils and caps, because you apply voltage, but current results, whether it's, you call it one form of current or another, displacement current, I don't care. The concept of current comes out of reactionary components, because electrical reactance formula are utilized to translate the application of voltage into the appearance of current as a result. And so that's enough to suggest that current is simply dynamic voltage changing over time as the result of the application of voltage, whether or not the application of voltage changes over time, because you can get a base frequency out of the application of DC voltage if it's applied to a very large inductor, let's say 10 Henry's, with a very small capacitor in series on either side of that inductor. So they're all lined up as a single file lineup. Let's say the capacitors are a tenth of a picofarad. And it's very interesting that you can't buy ready-made capacitors less than a picofarad. And yet it's not until you reach a tenth of a picofarad that the dielectric medium of a capacitor starts to behave prismatically like a prismatic substance with a refractory index. And it just so happens that a refractive index and a dielectric value are directly related. One is the square or the square root of the other, depending on which way you want to go, and I can't remember which is which. But it does point out that low-level capacitors act as prisms. They allow energy to pass through. They don't just charge and discharge in a reflective manner. They actually can allow energy to pass through and come out the other end, because they're prisms now, changing the speed of what passes through them, or cloning, if you prefer, splitting a parent wave into two waves, the daughter wave that passes through refractively and the other daughter wave that bounces off reflectively. So now you've cloned the parent wave at no cost whatsoever. You've got two waves instead of one, and I suspect it's half the wavelength, twice the frequency. And that's one way to speed up frequency, to increase the parameter of frequency aspect of electrical reactance is simply by having low-level capacitors. But you can get a wave started that way just by applying DC to that situation, and it's phenomenal what results you can, with the correct, properly constructed circuit, similar to the Egyptian Ankh, minus the crossbar, just an open transmission line terminating with a short at the far end, you can get all kinds of manners of things to happen. And that's what reminds me of why not to worry about the Amman circuit, because of the two closed loops, so to speak, along the length of the two closed loops, namely the two branch aluminum branch wires that lead to the two sets of capacitor plates that are insulated on either side, effectively, and the closed loop of the iron coil. Those are shorts. They are intended to be electrical shorts. One is DC, the other is alternating or oscillatory. The aluminum is oscillatory. But the main trunk line of aluminum wire to which those two branch aluminum branches are connected to, that's an open transmission line. And the two copper tubes are form a Y attached to that aluminum open single transmission line. So now we got two open transmission lines in a U shape at the nadir of the U, connected to one end of the aluminum open transmission line, the other end of which is connected to the iron loop, and also the aluminum open transmission line, the main trunk. That electrical node is also connected to another loop, namely the two side branch aluminum wires that terminate on the two opposing faces of a stack of capacitant dielectric parallel capacitance. So we've got two shorts and two segments of an open transmission line, divided in half because it's two versus one, two parallel versus one singular, two copper versus one singular aluminum. So we've got the elements there. The Ankh is there, minus the crossbar. So the open transmission line concept and the short at the end is all there. So technically, according to my own experience, under simulation, that's all that's needed to create the appearance of amps opposing volts out of phase by half a cycle, not as a wave, but as a blip whose duration, I have no idea what it is, but it happens only twice per cycle, once each half cycle, and it only appears to designate the point of nadir and the point of peak of the amps and volts opposed to each other in polarity. And that's it. The rest of the time, nothing exists during time, during the half cycle, each half cycle of time. The wave does not exist. It just appears momentarily twice each cycle. And that kind of indicates that there's no movement. Right there's no movement. That's right. So we go back to the analogy of the two cities that Pythagoras taught. One for levitation, which is movement, which is like the ripple wave that we think about, the pattern that moves down the length of a transmission wire, transverse electromagnetic pattern. And the other pattern is simply appears and then quickly disappears. It's a burst of manifestation with no ascending and no descending to get to the opposite polarity. And that's the city in which you disappear on one side of the wall or one side of the universe for that matter and reappear on the other side of the wall or the other side of the universe for all intents and purposes with no time lag whatsoever, even though it's a humongous traversal of space in between. It's literally as if the space in between did not exist, literally. And that's literally how the wave manifests in the circuit, with no traversal. The pattern does not traverse the length and the sub-circuit lengths of the circuit. It just appears everywhere simultaneously, and it can only do that if parallel capacitance links everything together. And so this is not merely a conditional requirement in order to replicate the simulation in the real world. It goes beyond that. This is the real world. This is how it manifests in the real world. The only way it manifests is everywhere simultaneously, but only for a brief moment, in which case we then have to wait for it to reappear for another brief moment, mapping out the half cycles of an oscillation. It's really a bizarre pattern. And it's only a pattern because, again, there's no movement. So really, you know, why should we be fretting if it's merely a pattern that we fret over? Whether it's a pattern that deludes us into thinking that movement is happening, a TEM wave, or a transverse electromagnetic wave, or is it a delusion that no movement occurs, a pattern that does not, it concedes that movement never happened in the first place, no matter what the pattern of wave is manifesting. This, you know, it's mind-blowing when you start getting into this shit, because it literally blows your mind of preconceived notions that we've been all brainwashed to think in terms of, and I have to recondition myself to think correctly and speak correctly. Same as all you guys. It's no different a problem or a challenge on how to think about this subject. Yet it's the only way to think about energy is to think about it correctly in order to think about free energy correctly, or else we'll never understand free energy. And whatever can be said about transverse and this other blip version probably could be said of longitudinal compression waves. That is simply a pattern, nothing more. Whether it moves, doesn't move, blah, 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 it's irrelevant, it's trivial. It's irrelevant in the sense of being so trivial that it doesn't matter anymore, because no movement ever happened anyway to begin with, even with the worst-case scenario of a transverse electromagnetic wave. If that thing doesn't move, why should we worry about a longitudinal wave? Why should we worry about the speed of light? Why should we worry about 50 times the speed of light? Who gives a shit? If you can't look at the entire truth in all of its aspects and accept it as true in all of its aspects, what the fuck are we worrying about speed of light for? Oh, you went past the speed of light. Who gives a shit? When you realize nothing moved, there's no such thing as current. Nothing moves except information. So if it's a pattern that moves, fine and dandy, but it's just a pattern. Just like Jeff Goldblum's character in Independence Day says in front of Will Smith's character and everybody else, a computer virus is just a virus. It has no physical embodiment other than its host computer that is hosting it at that moment in time, but can readily be transferred between one computer and another with no physical transference of anything material taking place. And people are scratching their heads, right? We take it for granted, but then we deal with energy and free energy as if it's something different than a computer virus. No, it's just a pattern. Anything considered to be electrical in its movement is merely a pattern. And yeah, it does affect movement of matter, or else we wouldn't have a cam drive possible. And Eric Lethwaite shows that in his video, Magnetic Currents, from the 1970s, with the rods bouncing up and down in series, moving a round ball above them. Okay, but it's transference at right angles, so it's really, energy is changing state is what it does among copper atoms along the length of a copper wire. And that sequence of events down the length of the wire is enough to be able to move something magnetically coupled to it and give us the false notion that the magnetic field is moving, the current inside the wire is moving, because the magnet, the permanent magnet outside the coil of wire, is rotating. Well, no. If you remember from your single-phase induction motor days, all it does is vibrate, and Nikola Tesla came up with a cute little method to break out of that vibratory state and get motion to occur in one direction, was to put in starter coils. But it simply throws off balance the vibratory state so that it vibrates more one way than it does the other way, off-center, to initiate and build up rotation, rotary movement. Otherwise, we wouldn't get it in an AC motor or an AC generator. But electrical movement just does not exist. And in a DC situation, we got pulses going on of attraction or repulsion. That has nothing to do with rotary motion. So rotary motion is an illusion. And Tesla's beautiful vision of an AC rotating magnetic field is just an illusion. The guy admits in his biography, out of vivid imagination, that he took to be real, so much so that he leaped off the roof of his parents' home holding nothing but an umbrella. And to his dismay, he was disabled for several weeks or months in bed, healing from that injury, and decided, okay, I'm going to train my mind from now on so I don't am not the victim of my vivid imaginations. And he trained it so well, he ended up with a computer for a brain that could simulate anything, mechanical or electrical. He didn't need to manually by hand work out engineering mathematical equations to predict what will happen on the bench before going to the bench to actually construct a circuit. He just simulated it in his brain to the millionth of an inch or whatever it was of disparity of his, let's say, mechanical device, ran it for a week, took it apart, looked at the discrepancies, rebuilt it, and started it up again in order to get another simulated runtime that involved a week's time of his real time to run the simulation in his brain. I mean, the guy had an incredible brain, not merely because of his photographic memory that his sister also had, or the intuitive quality that his mother possessed. It was just beyond belief of what a brain is capable of. But it was his nemesis, also his burden, to have such a vivid imagination, to be able to picture something projected visually, mentally, out in front of his face, and literally believe that he could reach out and touch it. Literally believe that he could leap up and defy gravity just by leaping up off the ground. I mean, that is a vivid imagination. But that's all it amounts to. And because of that, he really believed in the illusion of a rotating magnetic field, and he's convinced the rest of us that magnetism moves, that current moves, when no such animal exists. It's simply a pattern, just like dominoes. They don't run around the table. They fall in place where they stood, and they fall down in the same place where they stood, and they pass the information of change of state to the domino adjacent to them in series, creating a pattern of change, not a pattern of movement. That's where we go wrong in calling it a pattern of movement. It's a pattern of change. Multiple movements, then we'd be accurate. A pattern of multiple movements, but not a singular one. So there's not a single thing moving down the length of the wire. It's change of states moving down the length of the wire in sequential time lag to give the illusion of movement down the length of the wire. That's what our brain is wanting to put together, is oh, it sees a pattern, okay, but that doesn't mean that's matter or energy moving down the length of the wire. That's just a pattern, a photon, a massless pattern of information. That's what a photon is, because something has to traverse the empty gaps of space in between those copper atoms, and it ain't going to be current unless, as we say, it's current at short range. The magnetic influence, the influence of magnetism at short range. But still, it's still a pattern, regardless. And then if it's long range, if the copper atoms have been broken apart. The copper wire was blown up into monoatomic particles of pure copper atoms, let's say. Then, yeah, they're going to be separated by so much space. Magnetic field, short-range magnetic field, is not going to have any influence. And so now we do have to use a compression wave of longitudinal magnetodielectric style wave to get across the vastness of space, maybe at 50 times the speed of light. But in the mental plane, no speed. It's just instantaneous. It's just there. So all these things, I mean, you can't deny yoga in order to study free energy because they're so similar. And yoga is not a study. It's an experience. You either have it or you don't. It's not an illusion. It's not a phantasmic self-hypnosis belief. It's none of the above. You just have the experience. That's all. You either do or you don't. And your machine has the experience in front of your face, and you either deny it or accept it. One way or another, you've got a city power either in your body or in your machine doing its thing, and you either accept it or you don't. Well, as there's hidden wires, there's a hidden battery somewhere, blah, blah, blah. And we can't defy physics. Oh, really? Who says physics has any business sticking its nose in the business of electrical engineering? Who came up with that idea? Not the electrical engineer. Certainly not Oliver Heaviside. Not the electrical engineer. Uh-uh. Or even the mathematician, such as Oliver Heaviside. Uh-uh. No, it took a physicist to do that, and government to get behind it. Well, isn't that what drives this whole thing? If government didn't get behind physics would not be able to get away with its delusional style of thinking. It couldn't. It would never succeed. So it's really a cartel that makes physics possible between physics and government. That's the only reason why we have physics ruling electrical engineering, is because of the power that physicists have in government to back them up. So each is backing each other up. You know, when you got a mafioso family, a family of liars and thieves, they have to back each other up to give themselves the clout they need, because as a single individual, they would not survive unless they were ruthless, like Val the Impaler. You'd have to be quite ruthless and quite busy as well to do everything yourself, because dictators tend to have to do that. They have to do everything themselves, or else instill fear in their subjects to get them to do it for them on their behalf, one way or another, as an extension to themselves. Anyway, these things need to be said, because this is a psychological problem as much as it's a electrical engineering problem. We have a psychological block on free energy in various ways. We have delusions. We have misrepresentations. Sometimes for convenience, but it then ends up hiding the truth. So the simple version of Ohm's Law is taught to beginning students, but the more complicated version of what should be called Joule's Law is not taught to advanced students. You'll get deafening silence from any electrical engineer or physicist if you pose the question to them, well, how come the more complicated version that's more accurate is not taught to advanced students? They'll never answer you, because they can't, because they will not admit to the lies that they promulgate and maintain and sustain. It's really bizarre. But we have to give partial truths and make up the difference with fantasies in order to maintain the stability and status quo of our society, because the Department of Defense and the banking establishment require these delusional thoughts within the realm of electrical engineering to maintain themselves. And the ones from physics that supports it, like the void for vagueness, conservation of energy. What type of energy are we talking about, potential or kinetic? Well, that's void because nobody bothers to make a distinction. Since we can't distinguish between the two, it's both true and false simultaneously. You can't have something being true and false simultaneously on the basis of whether or not it's potential energy. Oh, it's false. It cannot be conserved versus kinetic energy. Oh, it must be conserved. It's true. No, you can't have something true and false simultaneously. It's ridiculous. It's void for vagueness because it's self-contradictory. Just on that basis alone, nothing else complicated. And I can attack conservation of energy three different ways, at least. I really didn't try to keep notes of how many different ways to attack it, but that's the easiest one. It's void for vagueness because it's self-contradictory as a statement. But who tries to make it slightly more complicated? Oh, no, we'll just call it energy and be vague and accept it as being... not vague. Accept it as being the law all the time. Oh, good grief. It's not so much that laws are meant to be broken. It's really that they break themselves. If anything gets broken, they break themselves by being self-contradictory, or else they don't break themselves. And because we state them for what they are, conditional. They are a law only under certain conditions, in which case they're not a law, right? they're a statement of fact. Huh? My version of the without the D sound. I mean, when you state facts, they're always conditional because that's the only way to deal with facts as being predicated on conditions. Good grief.